So I think it's extremely important for law firm owners and lawyers to also hold themselves accountable. After listening to this episode, if you go look for things in your system and you find them, ask yourself, have I provided the training necessary? Ensure that the team knows how to use the system. I would say 90% of the law firms that come to us do not know how to use the system. It's wild.
Welcome to the Tip to Skills podcast, where we discuss running and growing your law firm. I'm your host, Maria Monroy, president and co-founder of LawRank. Today, I am joined by Yanni Smith, and we talk about one of my biggest annoyances, intake. From setting up a phone tree to gathering data to utilizing Lead Docket to empathy, friendliness. I literally asked her, I think, every single question I could possibly think of. This is one of our longer episodes, but it's full with so much knowledge. I'm so grateful that she took the time to do this. I hope that you guys find this episode valuable. It's Smith, right? The last name?
Seriously?
Yes, seriously. To me, you're Yanni. Like, I don't think of your last name. Okay.
You know my name's Yanishka?
No, I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay.
We can save it for the podcast if you want.
All right. Yanni Smith.
Hi, Maria.
Hi. Tell us what your business is called.
I'm Yanni Smith. I'm with Legal Intake Pros, and we help law firms remove the friction and maximize intake to grow. So we fix the core intake issues.
It's my biggest annoyance is intake.
I know.
I fucking hate it.
I know.
I just wish everybody could just get it down perfect. Oh,
but it's hard.
It's such a tough spot for an agency too, because it always feels like you're placing blame on the client. So the client's like, no, the issue's you. And I'm like, no,
I know.
The issue, look at your call volume. The issue's not me.
Yeah.
But it's like always like a fine line of like not trying to shift the blame, but also mm-hmm. like bring attention to, well, let's talk about your intake, right?
Yeah.
Now, as much as it annoys me, I am by no means an expert. I know that you are an expert. So I wanted to pick your brain on like, what are like the most important things to get mm-hmm. down in terms of intake? Like if a firm said, hey, mm-hmm. Yanni, I maybe don't have the funds to hire you, mm-hmm. Or, you know, we're just like so far behind that.
Yeah.
I just want to understand like the top 7 things yeah. that a firm can do.
Yeah. The first thing I want to say is I used to be that client that was like calling the SEO company, like, we need more leads. We need better leads. So I'm sorry, because I know that you guys deal with a lot, but you don't know what you don't know in a lot of ways. And I think that what is harder to say than do is to like fix these issues when you're inside of the firm. So that said, it takes time and there's like no easy lift, but a couple of things that you can do. I know that most of your clients are probably on some sort of a call tracking
yes,
system.
All real typically.
Mm-hmm. So what we find is that a lot of clients have a call tracking system and maybe they have an intake software like Lead Docket.
I love Lead Docket.
Me too.
Yes, I know you
Lead Docket is great, but most people don't leverage like all of the features, all of the capabilities of Lead Docket, such as integrating their call tracking system with Lead Docket, adding all of your contact sources so that if you enter the phone number in of a potential client or you have a web form that comes in, you integrate that with the system and it will auto-populate an attribute to the contact source.
I have a question though. So
yeah.
we ran into this issue with attribution
mm-hmm.
where they'll sign a case, they have a phone number, but the phone number doesn't match the call rail number.
Mm-hmm. The caller ID?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like maybe they called from an office or their sister's cell phone or
sure.
something like that, where the actual phone number that is tracked in CallRail mm-hmm. isn't the best like primary contact number.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're trying to find where a case originated, what is there like a secondary? I know the answer, but I want you to
yes.
explain this to people so you can put us You
yes. So I love this question because we do this often for our clients that might want to get like super granular about specific landing pages or like location pages on their site without building out several types of forms on their site. So you can just use the UTM codes and enter that into Lead Docket. You can use the UTM codes or add specific like domain URLs if you're using a system like Lead Docket.
No. What I mean is, I don't mean the number that, like the call tracking number that they dialed. I mean the number that they called from. So the number that CallRail is tracking, say it's 800-555-5555 is not the phone number that is the primary contact's phone number. So at some point during intake, the callback number is a different phone number. So it's hard to trace that this phone number from CallRail is actually attached to this different phone number that we've attached in our CRM tool, in our case management software, to the client. So the client's phone number is not 800-555. It's, 323-8 whatever. You know, do you see what I'm saying?
Kind of. But are they entering a different number from the device that they're on?
Yes.
You can still use the UTM codes.
So but I'm not saying they're entering it into the contact submission form. I mean the intake specialist.
So in Lead Docket, this is why I love Lead Docket.
Okay, so there is like an extra cool thing. Okay, explain this to me.
Okay, so in Lead Docket, you can get super granular. So the way that we set up Lead Docket at Legal Intake Pros is we pull everything from the referral URL. So you have like the current URL, the referral URL. If we have UTM codes that we can feed into the system as well, we will do that. A call tracking system as well. So when an opportunity comes in, it will actually show a trail of this is the number they called from. This is a digital footprint in terms of maybe the page that they were on, any UTM codes that matched up. So there is a way to foolproof it in a way where you'll have multiple data points in the system.
Including their actual phone number.
Including their actual phone number.
Got it.
Exactly. So there's a way to do that, but we rely on our clients to get that information from them, especially like social media. So if they have a social media campaign and those callers or those prospects maybe didn't click the actual call to action on their social media to call, we'll just get the UTM codes from them so that it will automatically attribute towards this social media campaign or whatever other campaign that they have. So there's ways of doing what we call foolproof tracking without necessarily needing the actual call, right, in order to attribute to that contact source.
And are you also tracking like, so CallRail will give me like source one, like the channel drill down. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Kind of.
And it'll tell you like, it came from this website, but then they went to this.
Yes.
Like it actually gives you like a whole kind of history of what happened. Are you looking at all of that?
We are looking at that and you can pull that information in. So if anyone is listening and has Lead Docket, if you go to the manage section on Lead Docket and you go to integrations and you click on auto source roles, you'll be able to find that. You're welcome.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so that covers one thing.
Yes, okay.
What else do you recommend that law firms do? Like, kind of like the basics, right?
Yeah, basic.
Of intake.
I think that something that would be an easy lift that would make a really big difference is for firms to take the time to develop a call path. So not a script. We're pretty anti-scripts. We'll provide scripts, but the goal is to get off the script as soon as possible. What we mean by call path is like key points, right, of the things that the intake team will hit on if they're on the call with a prospect. That way it's consistent every time. We listen to calls all the time where you'll have a rock star intake specialist will score the high score on a call and then on the next one forget to explain the contingency fee. It happens.
Of course.
People get distracted. Things come up in their lives and their performance will fluctuate. They're human.
That's the biggest thing. The biggest thing is like a firm will be like, but I have this intake special and she's amazing. And I'm like, yeah, but they're still human. Mm-hmm. And if they also know that there's no one watching, monitoring, mm-hmm. right? Quality control. Mm-hmm. If they're having a bad day because they got in a fight with their husband or boyfriend or, you know, something happened, right? They're human and they could have off days, off weeks, off months. Mm-hmm. And when do you want to catch it? Do you want to catch it on day one, day seven, or day 200?
What we find is that if you have a quality control system in place. So what does quality control mean is an actual protocol that it's on schedule, that's never missed, where we listen to calls, score them, provide feedback in real time. We're looking at the cases that we didn't sign up. Why? We know exactly why we didn't sign them up, right? We're looking for these opportunities and we're finding them within 48 hours, right? Versus day 200.
Yep.
But your biggest rock stars are going to make mistakes. Mistakes are okay. Sometimes they may not even realize that they are regressing or, you know, maybe missing some best practices, because if you are a high volume firm, you're getting some intake specialists maybe processing 30 calls, 35, 40 calls a day. So forgetting to go through the contingency fee, if you're just kind of going off of your experience and, you know, just knowing the process, is actually pretty understandable. But if you have a call path that's, you know, this is a system, this is a checklist, it's right in front of you, it becomes just secondhand, what is it called? Like secondhand nature, right? They just know that this is that process versus one particular intake team member might have some pre-lit experience. So she kind of just knows to ask these questions. It's best to have everyone follow that same process every single time to ensure that we're providing every single potential client with the same type of service, providing them with the same type of guidance. One thing that we also see and hear a lot is something that should be included in this call path where they were intake specialists will sometimes forget to just explain the process. They'll just forget the part.
That's crazy.
I know. It's very common, Maria.
So
it's very common.
I have a question, and I guess we should kind of recap, right? So number one is like having a source to attribute things.
Yes.
Hopefully you have a lead docket. Number two is having a process for
a call path.
A call path. But so I have a question. So if we can kind of like take five. There's one thing that I've never been able to understand. If a firm says to me, and this happens all the time, when we want a case, we sign it. Like this is something that firms say to me very confidently every single time, right? Like when we want a case, we sign it. We have, you know, we always sign it. I know every case that we don't sign. But if there's no quality control, right? And we're looking at qualified leads or wanted cases, different firms call it different things. Is there like a particular term you like to use?
I like wanted cases.
Wanted cases. Okay.
Yes.
So if somebody says, hey, this month we had 20 wanted cases and we're just taking that at face value and not looking at, well, what happened with the other 70 calls that came in? How do we know that they just chose because they couldn't close it? They couldn't get the case signed up to mark it as a non-wanted case. Does this happen or am I crazy?
It happens.
It does happen.
It happens. And it's tough. So one thing I will say is that the practice of first, we're only going to enter, you know, the leads that we want into the system is just, it will cost a firm cases because you'll have the, you know, that practice of maybe the receptionist will take a call or an intake team member or maybe a lawyer, and it's for a case that's outside of their practice area, so they won't enter it into the system. And it could have been an LSA call, right? So we don't have the data from that call. But then you have this practice throughout the firm where we're not entering all leads into the system. And eventually, how can you guarantee, like you say, that we're actually missing the opportunity to enter the cases that we do want? So we do audits, and we have had experiences where we call in with a case that meets every single thing that the firm said they wanted. And we were told we're going to receive an agreement and we never receive it. But that's what happens when you do not put a lead in the funnel of a system to push it forward, to remind you, to prompt you, right, to move it forward. So
that's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking and it happens. So rule number, I don't know which one we're on, five, enter every lead in the system. No matter what, regardless, one, you'll be able to measure the performance of your marketing campaigns. Don't you at least want to know if you're getting a lot of bad leads from a specific campaign?
Yes.
Enter it into the system. Every single one of them, you're going to learn a lot if you do that. And as it relates to wanted cases and being able to track, right, if they're measuring or if they're using maybe the right statuses, if it's marked as wanted or unwanted, this is what you should do. If your system allows you to parse out what's called like a substatus or like a subphase, do that and remove the general decline. What that means is that your firm, if someone declines something or rejects it, it has to specify that it was rejected for gap of treatment, rejected for minor injuries, but just the general decline that doesn't explain why it was rejected should be completely removed. That way, they're forced to select one of those options, right? If a case is rejected. What happens is often is that if a case is rejected, but it was actually lost because maybe they called twice and couldn't get a hold of them, it's moved into rejected, declined. When you eliminate that and then you're auditing, let's look at the rejected minor injuries specifically, and you're realizing that the case facts actually include injuries, but maybe we didn't pursue them as often as we should have and we lost it, we're able to then pinpoint. So I hope that makes sense. So I'm stating that if you have a sort of like label or category in your intake system that is to exclude what a wanted case is, so rejected, for instance, add subcategories at subphases, however your system is set up, to include the reasons why a case would be rejected from your firm, but remove a catch-all, just declined, rejected phase, because that's usually where all of the actual wanted cases that were labeled as rejected will live.
But even with categories, in theory, somebody could mark a case rejected, but maybe, so here's my fear, right? You have a firm that is putting a lot of pressure on the intake team. You need to sign X amount of cases per month, right? And they can't close a case and they're getting a lot of heat for not closing those cases, for not getting those cases signed up. So they mark it as rejected, no injuries or whatever, no policy, no insurance, whatever the reason is, right? And my whole thing is like, if nobody's checking, how do you know that it's not happening? And maybe I'm just like inherently a distrusting person. Like anytime, for example, we use a CRM tool, we use HubSpot, right? And if somebody marks a deal lost, I get notified every time somebody marks a deal lost. And there's a reason. And I can go and watch the calls and look at the communications and say, well, what happened here? Did we drop the ball? Or was it just not a good fit? Whatever the reason is, right? Or they went with another agency, which obviously it happens, right? But for me, I'm always like, how do I know that this was handled correctly? And for us, like, and I assume you can do this with Lead Docket, but everything just feeds into HubSpot. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't have to be manually entered. Everything is already in there, and it can't disappear without me being notified. It can't be deleted, period. They don't even have an ability to delete. But it can't be closed unless I'm notified. So I just don't understand why law firms don't have, and I'm not saying that all law firms, but some law firms don't have the same type of
quality control.
Yeah, and just like, I, as a business owner, forget law or agency world, as a business owner, like I want to understand what's happening with these potential clients, right? Like, what was their experience like? What happened? And there's quality control. I will literally watch calls that my reps do. And if something didn't go as I would have hoped, I email the firm. And I'm like, hey, you did this call. I watched it for quality and training purposes. And this was said to you, but it's actually this or whatever. Like, I have now the ability to address it, right? So if a case isn't closed, and let's say you have an intake manager and they listen to the calls like almost in real time, like same day, and they catch something, they could literally call that person back and be like, hey, I want to connect you with a lawyer. We have tons of experience in this, this, connect it to the lawyer, boom, lawyer closes it.
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
No, absolutely not. So I think that I'm not going to say all law firms. I know that there are firms that are listening to their calls.
Yes. No, there are.
Yeah, they're listening to their calls. And I think that the key is to address that in real time. So if you're listening to calls, what are you doing with that information? Do you have a way to measure that? So is it a scorecard? If it is a scorecard, are you tracking the areas that need improvement? And how are we translating that to the team? How are we coaching the team on some of these areas that need to, you know, that need attention? That specific example, though, about miscategorizing leads is, I don't know if there's a lot of room for forgiveness, you know, in a firm where if that's happening continuously, because It's dishonest.
It is.
But it happens.
It does.
And I can't say that I can use that as an example to coach, because if it happens once, do you know how to use the system? If it happens twice, there's not a lot of tolerance for that.
And that's my whole point. Like, if you have a system in place to monitor this, then that was going to be my next question, right? Like, how much tolerance would you have? Because, like, I would maybe, it would depend on how egregious it was. Like, if it was like, okay, maybe there is like a coaching opportunity and there was, they didn't have the knowledge to, you know, determine that this was in fact an injury, you know, maybe there could be a hidden TBI, whatever, right? Like something super complex.
Sure.
Fine. But if it's like blatantly, I couldn't close this and I marked it as rejected, no injury, I would fire them. Like, straight up. Like, that's just me. I, like, have very little tolerance.
Assuming they know how to use the system.
Assuming they know everything, of course. Like, if they just... I would want to understand, like, what happened here, right? Yeah. And also, like, I guess it depends on, like, the history of the employee. Like, they could be like, I don't know what happened. Like, I didn't mean to do that. Like, I knew that this wasn't closed. Something happened, it came in, and I mistaked it for another case. And if you trust the rep enough, or the intake specialist enough, okay, fine. Maybe that one you forget. But then if it happens, like you said, again, now there's a pattern here. And it's like, then I would be very like, no, this is just not a good fit. But if you don't have this in place, if you just don't have it in place, you're reporting numbers back to your agency or your marketing person that you don't know are accurate.
What I want to be careful about here is, because I see it all of the time, what you're saying is that if they know better, and they know how to do better, then I'm going to hold them accountable to that.
Yes.
So I think it's extremely important for law firm owners and lawyers to also hold themselves accountable, so that if, after listening to this episode, if you go look for things in your system and you find them, ask yourself, have I provided the training necessary? Ensure that the team knows how to use the system. I would say 90% of the law firms that come to us do not know how to use the system. The way
that's
that it's
crazy.
It's wild.
So we use something, I don't know if like law firms do this. We used to use Trainial. Now we switch to Guru. And you can literally have these digital, like very corporate, right? Like I work for AT&T and every quarter it's like, you got to watch these videos and take this quiz at the end. And like you hate life for that 2 hours, but that's just the reality, right? But in this situation, they could have so many things digitally that And I'm not saying that this replaces the human coaching and interaction, because it absolutely doesn't, but it gives you a really great starting point.
Yes.
For a new person comes in, you start here. Before we even get to the role plays and the coaching and the actually let me listen to you on a call, start here, right? Do you recommend that they have some sort of like training in place already?
We typically will start with the fundamentals. When we have like a new intake team member that joins a team for one of our clients, but we assess them first. Not everyone needs the same level of training. Sometimes an intake specialist will have like pre-lit experience, so we can skip the whole part about criteria and case types. Maybe someone's completely green to the legal industry and they need like a 101. We start with data entry best practices. So that...
Wow. So before even training them on anything else, it starts with the data entry.
The expectation of how we keep integral data, that every single lead must be entered into the system. And that is rule number one.
I love this. Can you repeat that sentence one more time?
I don't remember the sentence.
You said something about... Okay. Well, we're going to like replay it. We're going to edit this and like replay it like 10 times over and over.
Every single lead must be entered into the system. And that is rule number one. Every single lead must be entered into the system. And that is rule number one. That's what I said. And that's where we start. So we start with, what is intake? Aside from legal, what is intake? What is the purpose of intake? What is a CRM? How do we want to enter this information into the CRM? What is a marketing source? What is a contact source? So that they're fully able to understand the importance of the information that we're gathering and what it means to them and why the firm is collecting this information. So we start there, and we do share some just very basic videos, but we do that just before our one-on-one assessments. That's how we handle it personally.
Okay.
All of our training is tailored to the intake team member. So we do our trainings live through Zoom video, and it's super tailored to how they've assessed their experience and how they performed on the audit, because we were studying them for about a month before we work with them.
Right, because you guys first do an audit, and we'll talk about your services in a little, but just so people have context, like Yanni and her team first do an audit, and then if you move forward them, then you're doing the actual coaching and data and all this crazy stuff. That
so, and like in our experience, we have a really strong assessment of the areas that they need coaching because of that.
But what if you're a law firm that like isn't going to hire you for whatever reason, right? Like, should they start with data entry, like teaching their team, this is how you use whatever case management software? And then I guess on that, I have so many questions. We could do like 10 episodes on this, but what if they don't have Lead Docket? Like, are there specific case management softwares that maybe you don't need something like Lead Docket? And if so, which are those that can, and is there any other tool you recommend besides Lead Docket?
If your firm is spending money to attract leads and cases, you want to ensure that you are investing in some sort of a funnel to nurture those leads, and that you have a team, so an intake team, that is empowered to manage those leads, that knows exactly what questions to ask, right? And that understands how to use a CRM. I mentioned Lead Docket because I love Lead Docket.
So I sometimes have firms that are like, oh, well, I do this through my case management software, whether it's like Smart Advocate or Clio, and they're utilizing the actual case management software for intake. Have you seen a case management software that can do what Lead Docket can do?
No.
My preference is always get Lead Docket, sync it with CallRail. That's my preference. Give me the reports, right?
A case management system is a case management system.
Yes, I agree. But I think it's like, sometimes I just think it's like a lot for a law firm.
Of course.
Like emotionally.
Of course.
Like forget the everything else. Like emotionally, it's like, wait, I have a case management software. Now I got to teach my team to use this other software, and I got to implement it, and I got to, you know, what is it called? Integrate it with my case management software, and I got to get them on board. And now the team's bitching and like, I don't want to hear it. And it's just like so many things that go into it. So like, I'm not trying to be insensitive.
Of
like,
course.
I run a business. I know what it's like to roll out a new tool, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's so, so important. Okay, so going back to fundamentals, you start with data, you tailor the approach depending on the intake specialist's prior knowledge, and then what?
And then we hit empathy.
Oh, I was waiting. Yes. I was waiting. I'm like, when is she going to bring up empathy?
Then we bring empathy.
I would have lost all respect if you hadn't brought it up.
No. So we start at the fundamentals, and then we move on to empathy.
But I have a question about empathy. So yes. Let's just start here.
Yes.
Can
I think
you,
I know what you're going to say.
Can you teach someone? Can you teach someone to be empathetic?
Okay. So this is an unpopular opinion.
Okay. You're going to say yes.
I believe so, but let me finish my thought.
Okay.
I believe that you can teach someone empathy, or at least
fake it,
or identify opportunities to be empathetic.
Got it.
The reason is because I think that often it's not that someone might not have empathy, they just may not have the tools
to show it. Correct.
It could stem from their upbringing. Maybe they didn't have a good example of how to, you know, articulate or express empathy. There was a meme that went around for years where it was like a friend who would poke another person that was crying with a stick, like, are you okay? Just to kind of give an example of a friend who doesn't know what to say.
Oh.
That happens. And
but
sometimes
do you think it's like worth it at that point? Because So here's my thing. And like, I use friendliness as like the other one, right? Are you friendly and are you empathetic? And I think they're two separate things. I think you can be very empathetic without being the friendliest. I think that you do need to have, and I guess there's a third category. It's like obviously positive attitude. So like in terms of like culture and team and like being a good employee, right? And then there's friendliness. And I don't think you can teach someone to be friendly.
Like, that's different.
I agree with you. And I agree that you can teach someone that maybe doesn't come across as the most empathetic to come across more empathetic. But I guess my question is it worth it? Because if I'm interviewing someone, and I've said this before on the podcast, like I would try to like, I don't know, be like, oh, I have the worst headache, or like, I slept like shit last night, just to see if they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, do you need to reschedule? Like, do they show that empathy, or are they like just ready to talk about themselves?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's something I would do, because to me, it's like, if I can hit on positive attitude, which I can tell if you have positive attitude in 2 seconds in an interview, literally two. I will end an interview 3 minutes in if I don't think you have positive attitude. Are you friendly? I think that can very quickly be
sure.
You're either friendly or you're not. And I can tell when someone is faking friendliness. I think it's like very easy to see that.
Yeah.
I think the empathy part is a little bit trickier, because you could, again, maybe not, maybe you are empathetic and you feel the empathy and you don't know how to show it. But I just think that's a tougher thing to hire for. So what are your thoughts?
So I think that obviously if we want to, in our screening, assess for empathy, assess for their skills, right? That's important. But sometimes we have someone that killed their interview. They seemed extremely, you know, they said they were empathetic, right? But they didn't have to be empathetic towards you during that interview.
That's why I headache.
So it's sometimes you're left in a position where you listen to a call and you realize this team member is great. We thought they were super empathetic, but they just didn't have the words to validate this person who was, you know, experienced a catastrophic injury. And that person could have been extremely empathetic in that moment, but just did not have the words to comfort that person and didn't know what to say. It happens. So I think that it is worth it if that team member is a willing team member. We only train and we only work with willing team members. If they're willing, then I think it's worth it. It's hard to find someone that's going to check all the boxes. And if they surprise you, I do think it's worth investing in them, so long as you're willing. If they're apathetic, on the other hand,
I think I would be great.
You would.
I really think I would be great at intake. I'd be
bored. I think
you would. In like 3 minutes, but I think I'd be great, because here's the last component.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And no, I don't want to do intake. No one asked me to do intake. Here's the last component. Can they close?
I know.
It's still a sales job. And I just think it's such a unique type of sales, because it does require that empathy. And if we think of salespeople, like the first thing that comes to mind typically when somebody says salesperson is like a car salesman. And I don't think that I would, like, nothing against car salesmen at all or women. I just don't think you automatically think like empathy when you think of that person, right? So I think law firms get really turned off when it's like, this is a sales team. And they're like, how do I reconcile the willingness, the friendliness, the empathy? And then you got to be able to sign up the case, right?
So the way that we package that is we use purpose. We actually try the word sales.
Sales.
We'll use it with, you know, clients sometimes, but we try to refrain from that with the actual intake team. And it's because the reason why you mention a salesperson selling cars is because we think of someone that doesn't have our best interest at heart.
Right.
Right. So when you asked the question earlier about fundamentals, we also introduce a couple of core beliefs into the intake team. And one of those is that they're an ambassador of the firm, that they help remove friction for all clients to gain access to get legal representation, and to remind themselves that they have the most important job in the firm. When a prospect contacts the firm, it is because they need help and they called the firm. So if you are following up, if you are moving forward with the ask, whatever you want to call it, right, to sign up the case, to make the sale, you are helping them get the help that they need. They needed that. Sometimes they need you to overcome their objections in order for them to know that I'm making the right decision. A prospect will often say, oh, you know, I don't want my boss to think that I'm a terrible person. And I know I got hurt at work, but they're also they're waiting for you to also tell them, no, that's all right. This is how the process works.
Yep.
Some people need that extra validation.
Mm-hmm.
So we teach the intake teams to identify those moments to reaffirm prospects about why they contacted the firm to begin with. But we don't focus so much on the close as much as you do what it takes to help facilitate the firm's next success story and to ensure that you're getting that person help and you relate to them. I always actually give the example of like my own mother. So my mom was a single mother. She was a widow, immigrant, and she was hurt on the job when I was really young. And she never went to get help, you know, from an attorney whatsoever, because she felt like, I'll bounce back. You know, everything will be fine.
That's a very immigrant mentality, though.
It is.
And they
it
don't
is.
Want to miss work. It is. So, like, all these components come into play.
But she never did. She ended up going on to have numerous surgeries. She had a spinal fusion.
I'm sorry.
Just a couple years ago. And that is the perfect example of someone who might be on the call with an intake specialist and say, you know what, I'm just probably going to feel better. You know what, I'm forget about all this. That is the response. That is when it is the responsibility of the intake specialist to remind them of their statute of limitations, to remind them that their injuries can get worse. So when you think about it from the lens of purpose and having that prospect's best interest at heart, it doesn't feel dirty whatsoever.
I love that.
It feels like a responsibility.
I love that because I think, again, it's hard bridging that gap. But from like an agency standpoint, I'm like, how do I get across to the clients that this is still, I know it's like sounds dirty to call it sales, whatever, but it is like still at the end of the day. And I guess it leads me to my next question. Like, what would you consider a good sign up rate? So if there are 100 wanted cases that come in a month, which I know that's like for a lot of people, that would be amazing, right? But how many should they be signing?
So I will say, I'm going to give a lawyer answer. It depends.
But let's say they're all wanted cases.
Are they med mals?
Well, no, because med mals, there'll probably be like one case in there. But let's just assume that it's a personal injury firm with no threshold. So they'll take a soft tissue minimum policy case. And that's why I use the word wanted, because for med mal, they could get 100 calls, but they really only want one.
Right.
One wanted, right? So I mean wanted like it hits they check every box. They're like, I want to sign this case up.
Yes.
It meets the firm's criteria. It could be, the firm could have a 7-figure threshold. It could have, again, soft tissue. They'll take anything, right? Assuming they want the case, 100 cases come in any period of time, forget the month. What would you say is considered a good sign-up rate?
If we want all 100 cases.
Yes, that's what they want. They're wanted cases.
If we want them, they're truly wanted cases.
Yes, truly.
We should sign every single one up.
But that's unrealistic in my opinion.
So if they meet our criteria, every single one of them, right? They actually are a wanted case, which that's why I asked earlier, are any of them med mals? Because the med mal can be considered a wanted case. It can sit in the wanted status for 2 months while they're getting medical records, and it will
But see,
impact.
that wouldn't count, because then it becomes rejected.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, truly, what is the percentage? Because the numbers that I typically hear fall in the 90 to 95%. Do you agree with that? Like, if you're looking at a firm that, let's say they have the data component done, right? And you're going and you're saying, okay, there was 100 cases in the last X amount of months that you wanted, but you only signed 60. Are you concerned, or are you like, that's a great sign up rate?
No, we're looking at the rest. We're looking to find out, why didn't we sign up those other cases, to look for the core issues. And you're going to have scenarios where you could have a percentage of those that hired another attorney.
Right.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. Most of the leads that where they hired another attorney are from web chat and web form because of the response time.
Mm.
So we're able to really hone in on that to see.
And that's my next question with like cadences and follow-up. So, but I'll get to that. But I'm not going to let you move forward till you give me a good number. What do you feel good about? Like, you've worked with a firm for a year. What should their wanted close rate be at for you to feel like this is doing great? Obviously, it could change in like literally a second.
Right.
I'm not going to discount that.
Yes.
And this needs, I think if anybody's going to take anything away from this, maybe everything Yanni says you don't agree with, which, I mean, that's problematic, but this is ongoing. Like, it's not a set and forget it. You can't just train your team, set it and forget it. There has to be quality control in place.
Absolutely.
But at what point do you say, this is good, I'm not so worried about it?
If your wanted conversion rate is actually 90%,
I love actually.
That's
I love
great.
What you said that, because you know that's the thing we talked about, right?
That's
is it
great.
Really, is it really
right?
You know,
if it's actually 90%, that's great. I'm going to tell you, every firm is different. Again, I'm really going back to maybe this firm handles a type of personal injury case that has like a longer like lead management cycle, like a nursing home or med mal. Those cases, unfortunately, will hurt the conversion rate. So like a 75% for them could be pretty good.
But right? Just a standard PI firm.
A standard PI firm,
volume.
let's say they're volume. They're a volume firm. We want to be at least, I would say, 80% and up.
Okay.
Where are the rest going? They hired another attorney. Most of them due to response time. And the second is due to poor follow-up.
Okay. Yes. So let's talk about this.
Yes.
Because this is like another of my sticking points. Talk to me about, let's start with response time. Somebody submits a chat or a web form. Or calls a firm and for some reason the call is missed. How much time do they have to have a reasonable chance at still signing the case?
If they miss the call?
They miss the call or it just came in through the web form. Like how much time, how quickly do they need to act? I'm being dead serious because you know and I know.
No, I know. I think that's hopeful that you could still get the case because and you let it go to voicemail, but I would say immediately. So unfortunately,
so what if you miss comes the call, in? Okay.
Yeah.
I know. If you miss the call, don't even get me started on that. You work with some of my clients where we're having this exact issue. And it's like one thing that we started doing. I don't know. Have you seen the emails?
Yes. I love them.
Do you?
The weekly recaps.
Yes. So what we've been doing for our clients is giving them a weekly recap of the prior week, how many missed calls they had, how many Google reviews they got, and we're actually calling their law firm and seeing how many rings it takes.
Yes.
So I'll start, and I want to like remember to come back to how many rings it should take, but talking about responsiveness, somebody submits a web chat or a web form, how long do they have to contact them?
So our rule is immediately.
And can you set up automations?
Automations for like an auto reply or?
Yes.
Yeah, we set them up for all of our clients.
Thank you.
All of our clients. We immediately, the minute that you submit an online form or a web chat, you are going into a high engagement funnel.
And what do you use for that, if anything?
Lead Docket.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, this is not sponsored by Lead Docket.
They would swear we're like getting paid by Lead Docket. Hey, look, Lead Docket, if you want to pay me, let me know. And yeah,
I second that.
We will, you know, take us to dinner, something.
Right, right.
But you know why?
Yeah.
It actually helps our clients.
Yeah.
So it's not about, it could be any company.
Right.
I don't care as long as it helps the client.
Right.
Right. Okay, so automatically they're getting what? Emails, texts,
whatever contact source or contact information method that they've provided.
And how quickly do they have to call them, though?
So we say as soon as possible. So within, if that's 30 seconds, if that's within a minute, as soon as possible. So we implement if you see it and you are able, like you're not on the phone, you grab it and you call versus grabbing it, assigning it to someone, and then maybe they have two more calls, outbound calls that they need to make, and then therefore that person might go 30 minutes before being called. Do not have an alphabet system to disperse leads because that's what will happen. You must have whoever's off the phone next needs to be the person to contact, make an outbound call to contact this web form or this web chat
now,
that came in.
How do you ensure that multiple people aren't calling at the same time?
So with Lead Docket, it actually blocks it out. If you are in Lead Docket and you've opened up an opportunity, it's impossible for another person to open it up because they'll strike it out and it'll say, Maria is calling Sari Beth in Alabama.
Perfect. Okay. Now, how many rings should it take? And I don't know if we have enough time to get into like the whole phone tree scenarios and like what provides the best user experience, right? So first, let's start with how many rings until it's picked up.
So I'm honestly going to give if you can pick up the phone in the second ring, pick up the phone on the second ring, set up your systems, set up your team, make sure that you have an after hours call center if you're not staffed up, right?
Is there one that you like?
You know,
they're the best or the worst, but
I think it's an industry thing. It's hard, but there are a lot of great ones.
You don't want to name them?
So right now, I think Intake Solutions of America is doing a really good job for some of our mutual clients.
Okay.
So they seem to be doing a good job at the moment. And Go Answer has done a good job for some of my clients in the past as well.
Okay.
And I know that some are happy with Smith AI.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah. I've also, the one that I've recently been recommending is Legal Conversion Center.
I actually have a client who just got Legal Conversion Center.
LCC.
Yes.
Yeah. But I need to talk to all of them. I want to.
I don't have a lot of, I haven't worked with them before.
What I don't like is only giving the client one option, because then if it goes poorly, it's going to reflect back on me. And I've always said, like, look,
yes,
it's not that necessarily I want to put all the blame on like a call center. I just think that's a really, really fucking hard job. Like,
yeah,
to run a call center, it's hard. And like, I just think that you really are looking for like who's the best of the worst. And not because of anything necessarily that's their fault. I just think it's inherently, like, impossible. Like, no one's going to do intake better than setting it up correctly in-house, period. And don't get me wrong. If you call Laurent, half the time it's going to go to an answering service, right? Half the time it'll ring to someone, but half the time it won't. But what we do is not as time-sensitive as what you guys do or what law firms do, right? Not you. Okay, so... Two rings is what I say as well. The other thing is, like, we just had this with a mutual client where it's ringing to one person. Then if that person doesn't pick up, it goes to the rest of the team or to another person. I can't remember. So now it's creating all these rings, right? As opposed mm-hmm. to the phone ringing at multiple desks at once. Like, what are your feelings on that? And what kind of phone trees should law firms set up? And before we even go into that, really quickly, how do you feel, before I forget, about phone rings? Press one if you're an existing client, press two if you're a new client.
Okay, so this is going to be an unpopular opinion too.
I love unpopular
opinions. I know how SEO agencies feel about phone trees, but so this is what my experience and what my perspective is about the call routing system and phone trees. So if you have a call tracking number set up, just route your LSA calls to the intake team pod. It's going to skip.
I agree with that.
Right? It skips the receptionist. It skips the having to go through a phone tree.
I agree with that.
So we always opt for that, right?
Yes.
Because you're going to save rings and they're going to get to the team as quickly as possible. And if that team does not answer within a couple rings, then we can move into our overflow structure, whether that's a call center, right? Or maybe a paralegal that's a backup, which we actually don't recommend either, because they're busy and they may not follow up on that lead. So we recommend pointing them directly to the departments when necessary. A phone tree actually helps with that. But I think the reason that a lot of people hate phone trees is because it sounds so mechanical, right? So we love to help our clients set up a highly personalized phone tree if they opt in for one, where the managing partner's voice is, you know, he's using his own voice, where he's welcoming them to the firm. If they're calling about an existing case, press one, or a new case, press two. And even when they're holding, they're listening to maybe audio of maybe a commercial that they've done that has like a client testimonial or their value propositions, because unfortunately, sometimes you do have to be placed on hold.
Yes.
But why not make it a hero's journey?
I love
while
that.
They're waiting.
I absolutely love that.
So I think that if we make the tour, you know, a little bit more personal, it becomes less of a negative experience. So I think phone trees are great when you make it like the most elevated experience.
I love that. Now, how do you feel about the firms that have a receptionist that then routes the call, right? And what I run into is that the receptionist will pick up the phone. Now, they're not an intake specialist. They're literally just the phone router, right? And they get on the phone with someone that is just dying to tell them about their case. And they just start regurgitating. And then the receptionist either lets them talk or interrupts them. And I don't think there's like even like a good way, period, yeah, to handle this, because if you let them talk, now they're going to have to repeat their story. If you interrupt them, they're going to find that you're rude. So obviously, clearly, you can tell how I feel about it. But how do you feel about it?
So we teach our intake teams call control, and we have very specific training for receptionists. What we do is, when what we advise is that when a receptionist is taking a call and asking, is this about a new case or an existing case? If they say new case, the first thing that they say and do is set an expectation. Thank you, Maria, for calling us about your new case. I'm going to transfer you to an intake specialist who's going to, you know, ask you the questions about this case, and they're going to be able to help you with that. What I'm going to do is just take your name and number, just in case we get disconnected, before I transfer you over. You get it in terms of what the expectation is before they have the ability to share. You're not always going to have that opportunity because someone may steamroll, yes, right, and just but move on to the call.
What about just, and I'm thinking out loud, but right when they pick up the phone, yeah, like saying something like,
Are you calling about a new or existing case?
Well, are you calling, could you please tell me if you're calling about a new or existing case so I can best know how to transfer your call? Like saying it in the introduction, somehow like getting it in there. So hopefully something clicks in that person's head of like, I'm going to be transferred.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So that's interesting because a phone tree does that in a lot of ways,
yes,
right?
It does.
Except for you have, you know, a real person asking that question.
Right.
But you have a little bit more control with the phone tree because they know what to expect. So I think that the goal is to set an expectation and you can, you know, modify the script so that you can, you know, ensure that they know that I'm not the person that's going to be taking this information. And the goal is to be able to set that expectation before you even collect their phone number.
What do you think is better? Phone rings to all the intake specialists. None are available. Should it go to the paralegals who are in the middle of doing something and they're distracted? And it's so hard, in my opinion, and I hear this in intake, where they're still working on whatever it is they're working on, even during the intake, because it's so, and I can relate. I think when you're in the middle of doing something and then like, you know, my kid walks in and they want something and I'm just like, I'm not listening to you right now. And I literally have to turn to my kid and be like, hey, I want to give you the attention that like this deserves. I'm in the middle of something. I can't do that for you right now, but I do want to give you that attention, right? Obviously, they can't. A paralegal can't do that on the phone with. So is it better for it to go to a paralegal that might not be able to turn that switch off and then the new switch on, or for it to just go to after hours?
I actually have a very strong opinion about this.
Oh, good. I love strong opinion.
I always want to be diplomatic, though.
No, fuck that. This is not the podcast to be diplomatic. People do not listen to this that get offended easily because they would just like live offended.
So there's something to be said about transferring a call that means that it could be more work for someone, right? And then giving them the power to make the decision of whether this is a new work order, essentially, if we're putting it in those terms, right? So if a paralegal is busy and they have a responsibility, it's really not fair for them either to have to stop what they're doing and then process an intake and then I'd be expected to follow up on that intake. They're most likely going to miss best practices to maybe enter it into the system, which we see all of the time. They're just trying to get it off. They're trying to get back to what they were doing. They may not enter it into the system, so it doesn't go into this follow-up funnel. Or in the event that they feel that they are overworked at that moment, they may set a higher criteria than the firm has in order to reject the case because they don't want to open another file.
Thank you. I was hoping you would hit on this.
Yeah.
Because there's reason why people that are going to work on the case, especially if they're not vested in it, like obviously if you're a partner or the owner, shouldn't have to sign up the case because now it's like, oh, here's another case where I'm going to have more work. Right. And that's the reality of things. Right. It's like, I don't even want to get into it, but I feel very strongly about it, too.
It's true. And that's why I have a very strong opinion about it. One of our goals, our primary goal, is we are trying to decentralize lawyers from intake.
Lawyers feel like I'm going to be like the one that signs up all the cases. Like I'm Harvey Specter. Like I need to be the one that gets on the phone. And in one way, I could see that, right? Like, of course, talking to a lawyer is going to be more beneficial in some ways. Like I could see why that would be super helpful, right? But on the other end, I'm like, but wouldn't your time be best spent doing something else? Like prepping for trial or managing the business. And I think that there is this belief in our space, especially when law firms are like in their, you know, first few years, that the lawyer has to be the one to do the intake and be involved in the intake. And what is an intake specialist going to do? Some lawyers will be like, wait, they're going to sign up the case. They're going to determine if this is a case or not. And how do you feel about that? And then I guess the follow-up question would be, what about, is there a time that is appropriate to say, let me transfer you to our, to one of our lawyers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all boils down to availability. So if you are a lawyer and you just are available to screen cases that you want and do not want all day long, and you're able to also keep up with other things, which means that we're not letting people off the phone, right, to take a message, to have a lawyer call them back.
Oh, yes.
That's where we see the bottleneck.
I literally hear this, like, even when we're, like, monitoring LSA calls, right, and we're, like, listening and notating, and I will tell the team, like, okay, well, how many of these ended up in signups? And they'll be like, well, there's no way for me to know because it's always like, I'll have a lawyer call you back. And I'm like, what? I'm like, put me on an email thread. Like, I'm just like, that should not be happening. Right? It's like, if they're not available, then just sign up the case. If you need to reject it later, reject it. How is the intake team not trained on what cases to sign up and which cases to not sign up, right? But getting through to the lawyers, sometimes, I don't know if you struggle with this, especially I would argue with like the newer or more boutique firms, that I personally think there's like some limiting beliefs around it. Like, nobody else is going to be able to do this as well as me. I'm needed for this. And I'm like, well, I mean, how does Morgan and Morgan do it? Like,
I think that it comes from lawyers feeling like they have to be involved in their intake process. I think it's coming from a place of wanting what's best for their clients. They truly believe that I'm the only person that can, you know, qualify this case and really ask the questions that are necessary. My intake team isn't trained on that. I don't have time to train them on this. And it just becomes this cycle, right? I don't have time to train them on this. I need help. I'm probably losing cases because I'm having to call them back and then they've hired another attorney. And until I can spend the time to train them, I'm just going to have to continue to take these intakes myself. And it's just
a vicious cycle.
There's no freedom.
And I think the other component to add, a lot of lawyers, at least the lawyers that we work with, are trial lawyers, right? So they are used to getting these very warm leads, right? But the moment they start doing any sort of marketing, I'm like, the marketing cold lead isn't going to wait for your callback. They are just not going to wait for your callback. So I think it's also like, and do you guys factor that when you're auditing intake, do you factor in that not all leads are created equal? Right? And like, how is that addressed?
I want to just go back and finish answering the other question for lawyers listening to this and wondering, can there ever be a future where I'm not stuck doing an intake call on a Saturday instead of spending time with my family? Yes, you have to invest in either a resource to train your intake team. They can learn how to approach a call with the empathy that's necessary, how to identify a viable case, a valuable case for all of your case types. And they're going to do a better job at following up with that lead because they'll be solely responsible for doing that. So it can happen. I just want any lawyer to listen to this to know that that freedom is possible for their firm. And with that comes growth because you have someone that is available to actually nurture those leads that you've invested to attract into your firm. The goal is to try to create a standard and a process for everything. If there is a trend where you, let's say that, you know, if it's not clear, if your intake team doesn't have a clear criteria of when to sign up a car accident case, take the time to document that, right? Or work with someone that can help you do that. And with a car accident case, I am under the strong belief that an intake team should be able to identify that case and sign them up without bringing in a lawyer. When it comes to another type of case where maybe there are nuances like a premises liability, what I like to do, and someone internally, right, that's not working with us can do this as well, is take the time to go through a premises liability case so that you interview the attorney and you bring the attorney. These are the leads that you signed up. These are the leads that you rejected. Why did you reject this lead? Also, if an attorney is responding in response to a lead that was sent with additional questions, just add those questions to the intake questionnaire. That's important information that can be asked during the intake process. And the goal is to build out your intake process so much that the attorney can just make a decision should they have to be involved. If they have to be involved, that indicates that perhaps there is an opportunity to document the criteria for this so that the intake team can handle this case. So what we do is, and sometimes it takes one, two, or three sessions where we sit down with the attorney and we truly understand all of the information that they need. And now that you have this information, what do you consider a weak case? What do you consider a really strong case and why? So we just dig and dig and we probe and then we document the criteria for the intake team so that they have a roadmap of this is a clear sign up. We might reject it later, but this is one that they will feel really good about if you don't let pass. Right. And this is what they consider a weak case. It's okay for you to bring in an attorney just in case there's maybe some nuances that they'll be able to discover. But you want to get as close as possible. And then, of course, you have your med mals.
If I were a law firm and you know you're going to get X amount, if you're lucky, of 7-8 figure cases, if it's like a catastrophic truck accident and you know the trucking company, you know that there's going to already be a minimum policy of millions, like, is it like, hey, we have a really fucking hot lead. Like, I need an attorney that can ideally also sign up cases. Because I think that that's like another, I don't want anyone to get mad at me. I know all of you think you're like the best at signing up cases, but I do think there are lawyers that are better at it than others.
Yeah,
I've even heard some that I think the lawyers can be kind of rude and condescending. And I'm like,
yes,
struggling because
they're busy, which is why you should have an intake team.
Okay, yes. But yeah. Now let's. And typically I hear this when like people don't actually have a case, right? Believe it or not, is when I hear more. And I'm like, oh, that was the chance for a review. Explain to them why they don't have a case. Be friendly. Get me that review. But that's a whole conversation for another day. Is there a point where it's like, if this magic criteria hits, we involve a lawyer? Or do you think, no, the intake team should be the best at closing it. They should have examples of results of cases that have been gone to trial. Should they explain, if there's a trial firm, should they explain the difference between a settlement firm or, you know, a pre-litigation firm and a firm that actually goes to trial? Because this is something I hear a lot from lawyers, right? Like, we actually go to trial and they're so proud of it. And I'm like, how proud you are? Like, I want to hear your intake be that proud and explain to the average consumer, like, they don't understand the difference between you and a big advertiser that you claim doesn't go to trial. Because I'm not trying to put down big advertisers either. I think that's a super hard job, right? And I'm all about marketing. So like, kudos to them. But what I hear from the trial lawyer is all these people ranking, or not all, but A, B, C, and D, and this big, they don't go to trial. Okay. Is that passion coming through? And I know where I'm like, I'm always like,
no, I'm keeping up with the questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all kind of flows, right?
Yes. Like, yes.
So let's just go back. Is there a point when the lawyer has to be brought back in?
So we establish what we call like an escalation policy.
Okay.
So all prospects, all potential injured people should be given the same level of service, but there are some that we escalate, which means that intake specialist is going to actually cover their same call path as they would with any other viable claim, which actually includes things like establishing the value propositions of the fact that perhaps we are trial attorneys, right? And that we have this experience, or maybe we have attorneys that have practice on the defense side and they understand, right? And then they have that intel knowledge. All of that has already been sprinkled throughout the call, right? If the intake specialist is applying that.
Which, you know, I would argue is sales.
Yes. So if there is a case where there is like an overnight hospitalization involved, right, or TBI injury, not only, so the conversion or the ask is different. It's when can we come to you?
Right.
When can we come to the hospital?
Yep.
So they're still expected to have that same level of gusto when it comes to making the close, but the close means when's the appointment, when's visiting schedule. They're still explaining how everything works, but they're giving them VIP service. So they're still expected to follow, that they're not going to stop what they're doing, look for an attorney, maybe they're busy and then have to call that person back. They're just sending it off. It's in motion. There's nothing to think about. Put it on the attorney's calendar and get it scheduled. And the attorneys all have that expectation. They would be more than happy on a weekend.
Right.
To,
oh, I'm sure.
You know, to attend that, just put it on their schedule. So we have an escalation policy that's about the level of urgency of when you can just sign it up versus sign it up, schedule an appointment, and get the ball rolling immediately.
Got it. And then now my second question, you've kind of already answered it, is do you have a very specific, or do you recommend that law firms have very specific processes per type of case and like results and, you know, whether it's settlements or verdicts or expertise, and really tailoring it to the type of case or type of, you know, accident or injury that occurred?
Absolutely. So your intake process for every case type should be very tailored to that case type or that sub-liability. It should be very tailored to that. It should include very granular questions while having control of the call, but just being able to know when to pivot. Your intake team can learn these things. It's very possible. It just takes time to map this stuff out. When it comes to being able to share results, a lot of our clients have intake teams with team members that had pre-lit experience within their firm, so they have that advantage. But we've also worked with intake teams where maybe they were a little newer to the industry, so they need more resources like, you know, prior settlements. But we love that. We love when our firms can share maybe a recent verdict or a settlement with their team and give them an archive or a collection, right, of stories that they can share, because they may not have a point of reference where they can relate to it personally, but they're able to share what the experience is like for someone that has gone through it as a client and how they came out on the other side to the best of their ability,
right?
To indemnify them at least. But they're able to come to them with a point of reference that humanizes someone else that's been through this. I know what you've been through. We actually had someone else that recently went through this, and this is how we were able to take care of them. We always ask our clients or any firms that's listening to this, if you do share a success story with your team, do not send a Lawyer's Weekly article. Sit down with your team and practice storytelling. Tell them how this case played out, how it impacted their family. Humanize it for them. If they see that passion in you, it's just going to feel that purpose that we spoke about.
Yes.
At the beginning of this. So I don't, you know, you don't have to do it every week, but just take the time, even if it's once a quarter, to just share one or two stories and be proud when you're sharing that. And it's really going to give them the purpose that they need to truly believe that they have the most important job in the firm.
So you know what's super interesting? As I'm hearing you talk, I see so many correlations in the way that trial lawyers talk about speaking to a jury, mm-hmm. in the way that their intake team should be speaking to these potential clients.
Yeah.
Do you see that?
Of course. Storytelling is storytelling.
Isn't that crazy though? Yes. Because you would think that they would be the best at intake. Maybe we just need to make this like correlation for them. I swear, just one last thing and then I will let you go, because that you said it and I'm like, we need to talk about this. How do you teach an intake specialist to have and retain control of the call? And the reason that I ask this is because I think that their ability to remain in control of the conversation kind of taps into authority, and that authority of like how they perceive the firm and how they perceive them to be experts. And I think oftentimes lawyers don't understand or don't want to acknowledge that, because this is the first point of contact, potentially, typically it is, right? They are the firm in that moment. So if they are not friendly and empathetic and are come across as an expert and passionate and with purpose, that means that their firm and everything that the lawyer stands for isn't coming across.
Yeah, absolutely. They really are the first impression.
Yeah.
And they're going to be measured based on what the firm or what the potential client thought about the firm versus what they actually experienced, right, when they're on that call with the intake specialist. So how an intake specialist can maintain control of the call is to guide the caller or the prospect, right, in whatever format throughout the entire call. That's setting an agenda, having empathy. But, and this is something I'll share, I hope everyone uses this, but you can tailor it to your firm. So we teach intake specialists something called the Imago Dialogue. And I could be mispronouncing that second or messing up that second part, but it's the Imago Dialogue. And it teaches the intake specialist to be able to validate, to empathize, but segue into a solution. Otherwise, it just becomes one big therapeutic session of, oh my God, I can't believe that happened to you. That sounds terrible. I know. Let me tell you more. And it just continues, and it's a 1-hour call. So what we teach them is to empathize. You can validate. And then we have a list of one-liners that they can use that segues them into the solution. So for instance, right, I could validate you and empathize with you. And I'm so glad.
Hold on. When you say validate and empathize, do you teach them to say what they said? What do you call it when you do that?
To mirror. It's part of the Imago Dialogue.
Oh, okay. Yes. So that's where I'm going. It's like very Chris Voss.
Yes.
If you've ever read Never Split the Difference, it's like you mirror.
Mirror back to them.
Right.
Yes. You and validate. Then,
yes. Yes. You know who else teaches this? Oh, it's actually a lawyer that teaches us that's not in our space. It's like Sean Calloway.
Okay.
And I believe he's blind. He's a lawyer. Uh-huh. And he teaches something very similar. Just, I've never taken his course because I'm so busy, but I wanted to because he literally talks about mirroring and validating.
Yes. And it's so important because often when someone is repeating themselves over and over again, when we think about our own personal relationships, where we might have had a disagreement and we're just kind of going in circles, it's because we think that the other person isn't listening to us.
Right.
Right. So we don't think that they understand.
You mirror, how do you validate? What's the difference between
mirroring and validating?
Why don't you explain what the difference is?
Yeah. So if I am showing empathy, right, I am acknowledging that I can imagine how you feel. I can imagine that you feel frustrated dealing with, you know, this unexpected event in your life.
Yeah, it sounds like this was very frustrating.
Yes. So that is more of an understanding, right?
Right.
We can put ourselves in their shoes. Whereas validating doesn't necessarily mean that you agree with them, right? It just means that it makes sense. It makes sense. And this will be a joke. It makes sense that you might be a little frustrated because you've left 3 voicemails to your paralegal and you haven't received a call back. It makes sense that you feel that way. I'm not agreeing with them. I'm not saying what you're saying is right, but it stops that call from becoming an unhinged call of projecting and a very upset caller on the other line. So by just letting them know that based on what you believe, it makes sense that you would feel this way.
Right.
That person feels heard, and it allows you to validate someone that possibly is wrong, right? But we don't have to disagree with them, but we're able to maintain control of the call and then segue the solution. So it makes sense that you feel X, Y, and Z, and I'm glad that you called me for help. And what I want to do next is you just completely segue into the solution.
That's so powerful.
To get control of the call. But if anyone wants to look it up, it's like a modified Imago Dialogue.
But
that
I just have a question.
Apply.
What is the difference? Because to me, validating and mirroring almost sounds like you're combining it by just saying it makes sense. That's the validating part. Mm-hmm. But then the mirroring part is saying back to them whatever it is that they're frustrated about. So it's like a better mirroring, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're validating,
Rudy's texting that you're presenting in 5 minutes.
I thought it was I thought it was running late.
2:45.
Can you ask her? Say,
let's get you downstairs.
She's just trying to call.
So we had a little bit of a scare where we were told that I spoke in 5 minutes, but it was really 20, so we were fine.
Yeah.
We kind of remember where we left off, but we kind of don't. So this is not going to be perfect. But I think we left off on having a very specific sales. I know you don't like that. Mm-hmm. You don't call it sales, but very specific. What would you call it? Talking points?
Yes. Talking points.
Talking points.
Yes.
And how to kind of tie all that into, you know, what was it that you said? Mirroring and
validating. empathizing.
Yeah. So tie it, can you just kind of maybe just tie it all in for us in terms of like controlling
the call. Yeah, absolutely. So often when a potential caller is calling a firm, it is very easy for that call to just derail. And often we'll see an intake specialist who needs call control training be on the phone for up to an hour. I am going to be honest, that has happened to me. I mean, like 10 years ago in a firm, I'd feel terrible for the caller and I'd stay on the phone for an hour, but that's not helpful. And we're also not, as like an intake specialist, you're not placing yourself in a place of authority.
Yes.
Right?
I always think of like the doctor, right? Like when you go to the doctor's office, do they just let you ramble and talk about what you Googled and what you're going to try and what you think you have? Or are they like, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
They ask you a bunch of questions. They're like, this is what we're going to do to figure it out. And then we'll come up with a game plan.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So they set the agenda.
Yep.
They set the agenda.
I love that. I'm going to call it that going
forward. This is what we're going to do first.
Yes.
And then we're going to do that.
Yep.
And that will lead you to this.
Yep.
So setting the agenda is crucial. And when emotions creep up into that call and start to derail the call, that is where you can use tools like empathizing with them. So I can imagine that you feel frustrated right now with X, Y, and Z. It makes sense that you're angry because X, Y, and Z. When someone is telling, their story and they tend to be going through a loop, mirroring is very helpful because you're able to repeat back to them what they said in a very clear and concise way and ask them, yeah, did I get that? Is there anything that I'm missing? That way they understand that you heard them, that you understand what they're saying, and then you segue into the solution. Often when people are repeating themselves, it's because they feel like you're missing something. So that's very helpful in that case.
Do you train them to say stuff like, it sounds like?
I guess in a way that is part of validating them, right? Because we're saying to them, it makes sense that you feel this way. Right. From what I understand, you experience X, Y, and Z and X, Y, and Z. Did I get that? Is that correct?
Yeah.
And it puts them in control to be able to say, yes, that's correct. You got everything. Thank you. They feel validated. And even if there may be, maybe if it's not warranted, just validating them helps to end and land the plane, especially if the emotional caller is maybe upset over their case getting rejected, which is very common.
We're doing this a little bit backwards, but I first wanted everyone to hear how much knowledge you have. But now I think we should back it up with like, how do you know all this? Like, what is your background?
Yeah.
So can you quickly just tell us like, how did you learn about intake and like, what have you been doing for the past? Like, what is your experience basically? Yeah. I know you just started Legal Intake Pros. I just think of you. I don't even think of the business. And I was like torn, I'm not going to lie, about having you on because you're like a secret weapon that I use for my clients. But I just think it's like such valuable information. So give us a little bit of your background.
Yeah. So my entire career, just to recap, has been focused on marketing and advertising. Specifically multicultural marketing and advertising in the Latino community. And that kind of segued somehow into the insurance industry. So I was an insurance agent for many years, writing car insurance policies, workers' comp policies, commercial policies. Yeah. And I oversaw a sales team. That is where I got my sales experience.
Got it. Okay.
That is where I really had an understanding of property and casualty and insurance. And interesting enough, that led me into the personal injury space. And I was working as an intake director and a marketing director for a high volume firm that practiced primarily workers' compensation and personal injury cases. And it was a fast growing firm. I had a lot of pressure from all of the partners to increase the number of signups. That's why I mentioned at the beginning, I was that person calling my SEO company saying, we need more leads. But what I realized is that no matter how much we were adding to that marketing spend, it wasn't translating to signed cases. And I realized we should probably hold up a mirror to ourselves and look at what's happening to those calls, to those leads, once they come into the firm. It was a very attorney centric intake system. So I then launched Lead Docket at that point, and we transitioned over to Filevine. We tripled the size of the intake team in the years following, but I stopped focusing on our marketing reports, and I started to really like zoom in on our lost and rejected leads.
I love that.
Yeah, and that's really what birthed my passion for intake optimization. And then I went on to just help other firms across the country optimize their intake systems and trying a couple of things that, you know, I didn't have a chance to implement at the time. And it's been truly a journey of just trial and error. So that's kind of what led me to launch Legal Intake Pros about 9 months ago.
Now, I have another question. I can't help myself, but like, one of the problems that I see with intake is that sometimes the team doesn't expand. Mm-hmm. So it's like, let me throw more marketing dollars, which then increases the call volume, but it doesn't translate to more cases because now the intake is inundated with calls. And I just think even emotionally, like just from like a human standpoint, after X amount of phone calls in a day, like, and knowing that calls are going to after hours or whatever, right? Calls are being missed. Like, I just think that's not the right mindset to be handling these intakes, right? Do you see that as a problem too, like understaffed intake teams?
Yes, but I do think that the way that we measure when we need to expand the team should come after optimizing. So
I love that. That makes perfect sense.
Find a way to automate, find a way to remove all the manual labor where you can, right? Remove the friction internally, remove the friction for the potential clients. And then let's reassess if this is more so an operational issue in terms of our processes, or if we need to expand our team. If we've optimized the intake team and our intake processes, and we are at the point now where our response time is suffering, that's a really good sign. Let's scale up. Let's hire someone else on the team. But if we're choosing to keep the team at that size, then it's going to cost cases, obviously.
Going back to your experience, after working at that firm, you then worked at a digital marketing agency offering these services, right? Before going off on your own. How long did you do that for?
Did that for about 2 years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, about 2 years there. And it was so much fun. Because when you're in-house, when you're inside of the law firm and you're able to accomplish this there, it's really a challenge to see, can I do this for other firms? So when I was able to experiment and help these other firms across the country and saw them achieve this transformation, it was like, I knew it was intake. Yeah. I knew it was intake. It wasn't just there.
So I'm not crazy.
You're not crazy.
Especially
she's right.
For me, so like we had an issue recently where a client sent me an upset email and he was like, I was getting 28 cases and I got 17 this month. Like what went wrong? And like, of course, I just go to data, right? And I go and I look at results. Has anything changed in results? Then I went and I looked at call volume. Call volume was up. So I called his cell phone. I thought I was calling his cell phone, but I had just upgraded cell phones and it actually went to the firm. And it took 7 rings for the firm to pick up. I called him back. I told him what happened. He fixed it. The next month, they got 34 cases.
Wow.
So yeah. I know, but it's just for me, it's hard to get everyone on board with this, you know, belief, right? Like everybody just talks about like, I want more. I want to generate more calls. And I'm like, well, are you maximized? And it's weird because it's not like I offer, like people think I'm like an expert. I'm like, I'm not an expert. Like they're like, well, will you help me? I'm like, you don't want me to help you. Like I know it more in theory than like intuitively just from like having a sales background, right? Than like in practice, right? Which is why it's so neat to have you and kind of hear you say all these things that I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Or like, I hadn't thought of that. You know, like it's, this has been super helpful even for me.
Well, I've enjoyed this. And just to your point, I know sales is sales.
Yes.
I don't like to use sales, but what you know and what's familiar to you, what you know for sure, of course, it's going to make sense in the legal industry.
Right.
Any industry, any business that is advertising for leads needs a funnel.
Right.
Right. It needs to nurture that funnel.
Yeah. I do agree that it's a very particular type of sales because of the empathy component.
Absolutely.
So again, that's where I kind of struggle with like the terminology because sales in an industry like this, sounds dirty. It does, right? But when you talk about like the purpose behind it, then that really kind of shifts. And then just measuring numbers, like you don't have to refer to it as a sales team, but if you're looking at these numbers, you have quality control in place. You're doing a lot of things that, in my opinion, I would consider sales. Like maybe you don't give it that title, but you're doing things that I think are very similar, like even just a funnel, right? Using Lead Docket the way I would use a CRM tool, right? Having quality control in place, having a script. And I agree with you. I love scripts as long as you're not reading the script verbatim. It's like you need to memorize the key concepts of like the key talking points of the script. And then you have to say them in a way that sounds conversational and that like makes sense to that point in time. It's not like out of context, right? And I think that's, in my opinion, the toughest part is like saying, use the script, but don't read the script, right? I think that's tough.
It's important for them to learn the where, how to identify the opportunities.
Do you role play?
We do role play.
Okay, cool.
We role play.
Sales. I'm telling you.
Maria is right. It is sales. Client acquisition, as I like to call it.
I like that. Yeah. I can get
client
that.
Acquisition. But you're right. It's all the same. But different.
It's all the same. But different because there needs to be tons of empathy. And yeah. It's, in my opinion, it's higher end sales. And anytime that it's high end, it's very specialized. And there's a lot of knowledge that the person has to have, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think that's like the key component. It's not just sales, it's high-end sales. And when you put it that way, it almost changes it a little bit. Like, I'm going to start saying it that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is absolutely possible for someone besides the attorney to be really good at that and to follow up.
Even better, I think.
Even better.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed this.
How can people get a hold of you? If you're not my client, please don't call her.
You guys can reach me at legalintakepros.com and legalintakepros on all social media as well.
Perfect. Thank you, Yanni. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Maria.
Thank you to Yanni Smith for everything she shared with us today. If you found this story valuable, please share it with someone you want to see succeed. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Leave a 5-star review. It goes a long way to help others discover the show.